The Gospel of John, chapter 18, ended at about verse 15 in this context on last Lord's Day morning. I want to pick up at verse 12 in case you were not here, simply for the context. We have the occasion, of course, in which Jesus has been arrested on this occasion. And then following his arrest, of course, we have his trial mentioned here in John 18. Of course, you could look at the other gospel accounts as well, Matthew chapter 26 and 27 for the trial, and Mark chapter 14 and 15, and Luke 22 and 23. The synoptic gospels, those that I just mentioned, of course, add a lot of understanding to the things that are taking place during this particular period of time in the trial of Jesus. But we're concerned mostly with what John records, and so we'll keep our comments within the context of John's writing. The Gospel of John, chapter 18, reading at verse 12 in the New King James Version. Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. It was verse 15 where we ended our study last Lord's Day morning. And we were making some comments in regard to Simon Peter following Jesus after he was arrested. Of course, John nor the other gospel accounts, they simply do not tell us why Peter followed Jesus. Perhaps he was just curious and wanted to know how things were going to turn out. But we're not told. It would only be speculation. But there's also another disciple mentioned here that followed as well. And we're not told who this disciple is. Of course, many believe that he is the Apostle John himself. But again, we simply do not know that. That's an inference that can be drawn from all the accounts that we would read, but not a necessary inference. We're told in verse 15 that the disciple that is unnamed was known to the high priest. We said last Lord's Day morning that that word known has reference to him being a close acquaintance with the high priest, perhaps even a friend, someone that had some kind of relationship with the high priest. And so I had said that I find it hard to believe that it was John the Apostle that had that kind of relationship with the high priest, but it is possible. We simply do not know the individual who is under consideration. This individual was so well known by the high priest and evidently by those of his staff, that is, the slaves who would minister to the high priest, that the slave girl was so familiar with him that she allowed Peter to come in to the courtyard simply based upon, evidently, the word of this unnamed disciple. Verse 16, John 18. But Peter stood at the door outside, that is, the gate outside the courtyard of the high priest's residence. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to her who kept the door. Went out and spoke to her, the slave girl mentioned in verse 17. She kept the door, she was the doorkeeper, and brought Peter in. So this disciple was so well known that simply by him vouching for Peter, Peter was allowed into the courtyard. Verse 17, John 18. Then the servant girl, or more literally the slave girl, the female slave, who kept the door, said to Peter, "You're not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not. I am not. You're not also." Seems as though that when she asks this question, she gives Peter the answer to how he should respond. I am not. It seems as though she's asking a question and looking for a negative response in the question. Now, if you remember, Jesus had told Peter, after Peter had spoken out so boldly and so confidently regarding his faith in Christ back in chapter 13, beginning in verse 36. Chapter 13, beginning in verse 36. Now remember, this was on this very night when Jesus was preparing them for their apostleship. Chapter 13 and verse 36, Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" And Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterwards." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake." Jesus answered him, "Will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly," or "truly, truly," or "verily, verily, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times." And so here in John 18 and verse 17, this is the first occasion that he denies him. Of course, John records the fact that he denies being one of his disciples. Being one of his disciples, of course, would be denying Christ if he denied to be one of his disciples. "You're not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." So that goes back to chapter 13 and verse 38. Verse 18 of chapter 18 of the Gospel of John, "And the servants," or more literally the slaves, "and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself." So when Peter comes into the courtyard of the high priest's residence, and remember this is where Annas is living. He is the father-in-law of Caiaphas. He was a high priest at one time, 15 years earlier, but he still wielded a great deal of influence. And so when Peter comes into the courtyard of the high priest, there are slaves and the officers, of course, are those of the Sanhedrin, perhaps some of those that had gone with the Roman soldiers on this occasion to arrest Jesus. So the slaves and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold. It was cold. Now, does anyone know what time of the year it might be? But it's cold. Well, it's probably the first part of April, middle of April. It may have been last part of March. And so it's cold. It's in the middle of the night. It's in the middle of the morning, as a matter of fact, real early in the morning. But it's cold because the city of Jerusalem, remember, is over 1,500 feet above sea level, sits on the edge of a desert. So it would have been warm during the day, but in the night, in the early hours of the morning, of course, it would become very cold, and you would need some way to warm yourself, and that's what's going on at this particular period of time, even though it's perhaps April. "For it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself." Verse 19 of John 18. We'll see in this context that what we have is that we have the questioning or the interrogation of Jesus, but we have inserted in that the denial of Peter in regard to Christ and knowing him, inserted as well from time to time. So after having mentioned the presence of Peter and the first occasion in which he denies him, verse 19 of John 18, the high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. The high priest. Now, don't be confused. It's not Caiaphas, even though Caiaphas is the high priest. But the high priest under consideration, remember, is Annas. So we might say, well, which one is high priest? Well, both of them's high priest. You know, in our own nation, even though Trump is not president, he's still referred to as president. So it was true back then, just as it is now. One who served as a high priest, though he may have left the office, he was still referred to as high priest. So the high priest that is under consideration in John 18 and verse 19 is Annas, the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the one who's serving as high priest at this particular period of time. So the high priest then asked Jesus, note what he asked him about. He asked him about his disciples and his doctrine, that is, his teaching, that is, what were you teaching? Now, evidently on this occasion he's being taken to Annas first and being interrogated by Annas in order to perhaps manipulate him into saying something that would give them cause to put him to death. Perhaps they want him to speak in such a way that he will prove himself to be guilty. But Jesus is not going to do that. As a matter of fact, we see who's in charge of this whole operation, and we'll see the boldness of Jesus on this occasion, that the high priest Annas, though he may have a great deal of influence and power among the people and even before the Romans, he has none of that with Jesus. So the high priest asked him about his disciples and his doctrine, his teaching. That is, what he was teaching. Is what he was teaching, was it contrary to the law? Was it contrary to something that and they could hold against him and perhaps use against him to be able to put him to death? Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing." So Jesus' response here, remember, he's asked about his disciples and his doctrine, that is, his teaching, what he has taught. And so he said, "I spoke openly to the world." So the word "spoke" there has to do with his teaching. "I taught openly to the world," that is, publicly to the world, that is, to the inhabitants of the world, I openly taught. Wherever he was at, he didn't do it in secret. Openly and publicly, he taught his doctrine. He said, "I always taught." So we see the word "spoke" and "taught" is synonymous in the verse. "I always taught in synagogues." And that's true, he did teach in synagogues, even in the Gospel of John. From time to time, he would visit a synagogue and would teach. On occasion of this, John 7 and verse 14, "I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple." John 7 and verse 28, "where the Jews always meet." So, He was a public teacher. He taught openly and in public to all the inhabitants of the world, to all the inhabitants of the land. And he would even go where all the Jews met, and he taught in the synagogues and in the temple. Note this, "and in secret I have said nothing." In secret I have said nothing, or privately I have said nothing, or I have taught nothing. Now, let's not get the idea that what he's saying here is he never said anything in private to anyone, because he did. Chapter 13 through chapter 17, who was there? His disciples, his apostles. So he did speak to them privately, but the point that he's making here is, when he makes this statement here, and John records, "and in secret or privately I have said nothing," I've taught nothing. I have taught nothing privately that I have not taught publicly. That's the point that he's making. What he's saying is, I'm not two-faced. I don't teach one thing in private and then in public teach something else. Because the question had been asked about his doctrine, about his teaching. He spoke the same thing publicly that he spoke in private. And so verse 21, "Why do you ask me?" Ask me what? Well, ask me particular about what he teaches. Ask those who have heard me. Ask those who've heard my doctrine. Ask those who've heard my teaching. What I said to them, indeed they know what I said. They know what I taught. So ask them. Now it seems as though Jesus is being very, you might say, direct with Annas on this occasion. That he is kind of throwing it back in his face, so to speak. But actually, there's more to this than meets the eye. Because Jesus is on trial. He's being interrogated by Annas. And so what Jesus does, he is telling Annas, in a sense, that you're not following the law. The Jews were much like we are today in our courts of law. In our courts of law, the one who is accused or the one who is charged doesn't immediately take the stand and testify in his defense. No, who does? Well, witnesses are presented. Witnesses are presented, and then those witnesses are interrogated. Do we get the point here? So, they want to charge Jesus with something. They want to find something by which they could put him to death. Well, if that be the case, the first thing they should do is accumulate witnesses. They should bring forward witnesses who can testify to his guilt. And if there are witnesses who could testify to his innocence, they also need to be interrogated. But who's being interrogated? The one whom they're charging. So Jesus says, you need to ask the witnesses. You need to ask the witnesses what I've taught. Where are these witnesses? You're asking me about what I'm teaching, what I have taught. Where are the witnesses? Where are the witnesses that can testify to what I've taught? Well, there were no witnesses at this point because it's a sham trial. So verse 21 again, John 18, why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. Now when we read the other gospel accounts, eventually, when Jesus goes before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin Council, there are witnesses, but they are lying witnesses, of course. But on this occasion, before Annas, there are no witnesses yet. That's why I say it seems as though he was brought before Annas that he might be intimidated by Annas. And that perhaps he may say something by which they could bring a charge against him to be able to put him to death. But he's not intimidated by this man Annas on this occasion. Verse 22 of John 18. And when he had said these things, note this, what things? Well, the things that he had just addressed to Annas. When he had just said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, do you answer the high priest like that? Struck him with the palm of his hand. To slap somebody in the face is a very humiliating thing. It humiliates the person who is slapped in the face. And it's an intimidation technique as well. So he's being intimidated here. But the intimidation is not working because note what Jesus says here on this occasion. Jesus answered them, if I have spoken evil, note this, bear witness of the evil. That is, produce evidence to prove it. If I've spoken evil, produce evidence to prove it. And if you cannot produce the evidence that I've spoken evil, then why strike me? Note the verse. If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evidence. That is, give testimony. Give proof that I've spoken evil. But if well, if I've spoken well, and the word well here means accurately, correctly, rightly, why do you strike me? Yes, Jesus did speak accurately. He did speak correctly because he asked for witnesses. You see, that's what he's asking for. If I'm going to be interrogated, if I'm going to be put on trial, ask the witnesses. But they didn't have any witnesses.
The person that struck Jesus, he should have been rebuked and reproved by Annas.
He didn't do it. Because it was it's a sham trial. They want to humiliate Jesus. They want to intimidate him. They want him to say something that they can use by which they can eventually bring about his death. But he's not intimidated on this occasion. As a matter of fact, they simply cannot get anything over on Jesus. And so verse 24, then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas the high priest. I guess Annas, being much older and wiser, says, well, we can't intimidate this man. He will not be intimidated. And so Annas, the previous high priest, sends him bound to Caiaphas. Sends him bound. That is, they tie him up again. Now, he was bound back in chapter 18 and verse 12 when he was first arrested. He may have been unbound when he came before Annas. That is, they may have untied his hands. But nonetheless, they tie him up again and they send him to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now, John, of course, doesn't tell us about his time with Caiaphas. We'd have to go to the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and read of the occasion in which he's brought to Caiaphas and the witnesses and so forth as Jesus stands before the Sanhedrin Council. John simply passes over the occasion with Caiaphas very quickly and then gets on to the trial of Jesus before Pontius Pilate, the governor of Judea. So verse 24, John 18 again, then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas the high priest. Now after saying that, in the meantime, John goes back to Peter and his denial of Christ. Verse 25, now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Goes back to what was mentioned earlier in verse 18. Therefore they said to him, they, evidently the slaves and the officers who are standing around the fire where Peter is, some from that company. Therefore they said to him, you're not also one of his disciples, are you? He denied it and said, I am not. He denied it. He contradicted. So they're saying he was one of his disciples, so he contradicts them and says, I am not. I want you to note that phrase, though. Remember all the occasions that Jesus said, I am? And Peter's denial of Jesus is, I am not. Is there something in that? I don't know. It could be that he's denying that Jesus is, in fact, the Son of God, deity. In his denial of him, by that phrase, I am not. The word denied here simply means that he contradicts. They say one thing, he contradicts it. Now, if he was going to confess Christ, remember that word confess in the Greek means to say the same thing. Literally, that's what the word means, to say the same thing. So if you're going to confess Christ, you're going to say the same thing he says about himself, that he is the Christ, the Son of God. So when you confess Christ, you say the same thing that he does. When you deny Christ, as Peter denied on this occasion, you say the very opposite. You contradict that. Verse 26, John 18. One of the servants, or literally slaves of the high priest, note this, a relative or kinsman of him whose ear Peter cut off, earlier in the chapter, in verse 10, he cut off Malchus's ear, remember, a slave of the high priest. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" So this servant was also with the group that had arrested Jesus. "Did I not also see you with him?" Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. A rooster crowed. This kind of tells us about what time of the night it was. A rooster crowed. The Romans had a watch that consisted of four equal time periods. A watch meaning a guard. That is, from 6 o'clock in the evening to 9 o'clock, from 9 o'clock to midnight, from midnight to 3, from 3 to 6. Well, the rooster would normally crow a couple of times during the night, sometime after midnight, from midnight to 3 in the morning. And then the rooster would crow again, sometime between 3 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And so, which crowing of the rooster is under consideration? It's perhaps the last one. And then Peter denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. We see these four occasions in Mark 13 and verse 35. Turn with me over there. Mark 13 and verse 35. Mark 13 and verse 35. In a parable that Jesus speaks. We see these four time frames. Mark 13 and verse 35. "Watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming." Note this. In the evening, there's 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. At midnight, you see that? At midnight, from 9 o'clock to midnight. At the crowing of the rooster, that's from midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning, or in the morning. So when we come to our text under consideration here, and the rooster crowed, it's in the middle of the night. It's in the middle of the night when Jesus is with Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin Council. Now, of course, we don't know exactly what time it is, but perhaps sometime between 3 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning is when the rooster crowed.
James, I used to have a rooster. They crow all the time.
They crow all the time. Well, basically, that's a period of time they crow. They do crow at different times, but the crowing of the rooster, you could almost set your clock by them. And that's why the Romans had a phrase, the crowing of the rooster, referred to a time period of night. Not a specific time period, but a time period within itself, like 3 to 6 in the morning. Verse 28. "Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, and it was early morning. Then they led," that is, you see, he didn't speak much about the trial with Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin Council. But as I said, you go to the other gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and you can read more about that trial. "Then they led Jesus." They led him. Now, of course, it's some of the members of the Sanhedrin Council, the high priest, and officers who take Jesus to the Praetorium. The Praetorium, of course, was the palace of Herod. It was the place in which the Roman governor would stay when he comes to the city of Jerusalem. The Roman governor would normally stay on the sea, on the Mediterranean Sea coast at the city of Caesarea. But because it's the Passover festival, he, of course, would come and bring additional Roman soldiers with him to the city of Jerusalem to quell any violence that might arise from the Jews. So they lead Jesus from Caiaphas this time and from the Sanhedrin Council to the Praetorium. And in this Praetorium, that is, in this palace, there is a place called the Judgment Hall where they would hold the trial of Jesus before the governor. And so they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, and it was, note this, early morning. It was early morning. Now, what day is it? What day is it in the context? Do you know? This is important for us to kind of piece together the time in which Jesus was crucified. Does anyone know what day it is? Remember, it was on Thursday evening when Jesus partook of the Passover meal with his apostles and instituted the Lord's Supper. Well, this is early morning on Friday. This is Friday, very early in the morning. The rooster has crowed. We might say it could be 6 o'clock in the morning. And we see that these people are coming to work at that time. As a matter of fact, they're going to start the trial of Jesus before the governor. And so they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, they being Jews, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Lest they be defiled, lest they become ritually unclean. To enter the house of a Gentile would make them unclean. Now, get this, the old law didn't teach any such thing, but the Jews had said to enter the house of a Gentile would make them unclean. And so these Jews on this occasion, who's going to put an innocent man to death, are worried about becoming ritually unclean, so they'll not be able to continue in the feast of the Passover. How hypocritical they are, isn't it? So they themselves did not go into the Praetorium. They would not enter into Herod's palace and into the judgment hall, of course, unless they become ritually unclean, but that they might eat the Passover. Now, see this phrase, eat the Passover? This confuses some. But we shouldn't be confused because we've studied this in times past. Remember, the word Passover is used in several different ways in the Scripture. Sometimes it has reference to the Passover lamb, the physical Passover lamb. Sometimes it has reference to the Passover lamb, Jesus Christ. Sometimes it has reference to the particular day or the meal of Passover that Jesus had with his disciples in chapter 13 of the Gospel of John we read about earlier. Sometimes it has reference to the entire 7 days regarding the feast of Passover. And that's the way it is used here. Remember, they'd already kept the Passover meal. But after the day of Passover, that is particular day on which the Passover lamb was killed and they partook of that Passover meal, there would be 7 days to follow of unleavened bread. And that's what's under consideration. They didn't want to make themselves ritually unclean to where they could not continue to observe the feast of Passover. Because if they become ritually unclean, the Passover festival would be over with before they could become ritually clean again. And so that's what's under consideration, that they might eat the Passover, not the literal Passover meal that had already occurred on Thursday evening, but that they might continue in the feast of Passover. Because there would be a meal every day, not the Passover meal itself, but there would still be a meal every day. And they wanted to continue to observe the feast of Passover. So don't be confused about that. Verse 29, John 18. Pilate then went out to them. Now note, the governor goes out to them. How much power do the Jews have? This tells you how much power they have. They won't even come into the building where he's at, lest they be unclean. But what does the governor do? The governor goes out to them. Who has more power? the Jews have a lot of power. In our study of the book of Revelation, we're going to read, and we almost got to it last Wednesday evening, about Jerusalem reigning over the kings of the earth. Well, this was an occasion where Jerusalem, or the Jews, reigned over a governor. And I want to suggest to you, if it had been Nero, he would have probably gone out to him as well. But on this occasion, Pontius Pilate, the governor of Judea, goes out to them because they won't come in.
I would say that he probably wasn't too happy about doing that, because also it was early in the morning. Probably was in a bad mood.
Well, the people during this particular period of time started their days early. As a matter of fact, usually by the time the sun came up, and that might be why people of our age, that is, before our age and even our age, our parents and grandparents started their day. They'd be in the field when the sun came up. I used to wonder about that. Why did we get up and go to the cotton patch or the cornfield when it was still dark? So we could be there when the sun came up. That's why. Well, these people started their day awful early as well. As a matter of fact, historians say their day ended sometimes at noon, because they started the day so early. They got all their work done that they wanted to accomplish by noon, and that way they could spend the rest of the day in leisure or doing things that they really had a desire to do other than working in the fields. And so on this occasion, it's very early in the morning, and he goes out to them. They would have begun trials during this particular period of time. Pilate went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man? What accusation, what charge do you bring against this man?" And in case you don't know anything about Pontius Pilate, he was the governor of Judea from 25 AD to 36 AD. In 36 AD, he made some decisions and did some things that the governor of Syria didn't like, and the governor of Syria brought the accusations and charges to Tiberius, and Tiberius deposed him, put someone else in his place. Historians believe that he later on, 3 years later, committed suicide. Whether he did or not, we really do not know. But that's the speculation that took place. Nonetheless, on this occasion, Pontius Pilate, being the governor of Judea, goes out and asks the Jews, "Well, what's the charge against this man? What accusation are you making against him?" And we'll have to stop there because we're out of time. You'll notice in the following verses, though, they don't give a charge. They don't really know what they're going to charge him with yet. They just know that they want to put him to death. We'll pick up here at John 8. And verse 30, next Lord's Day morning. Questions or comments? All right, we'll pick up here. John 18 and verse 30, next Lord's Day morning. Thank you very much for your kind attention.